You're listening to TIP.
The main idea is that if you attempt to 10x something, by default, it's always going to be easier than trying to double your effort. And the reason is because when you go to 10x something, you have to be revolutionary in how you're approaching it. Because to 10x, your profit or your output or your rental portfolio is massive. So you have to think massively outside the box, delegate massively, be super attentive to detail. And even if you fail by half, you still 5x it.
Hey guys, in today's episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down and talking with Grace Gudenkauf and Amelia McGee to discuss how they got started on their journey of real estate investing. You'll learn about their individual portfolios and how they financed them, how they got connected and co-founded Women Invest in Real Estate, what you'll learn from their forthcoming book, The Self-Managing Landlord, the books that have influenced them the most, what they like to do in their free time, and a whole lot more. Grace and Amelia are co-founders of Women Invest in Real Estate, known as WIRE, and are also full-time investors from Iowa. They've recently authored the book, The Self-Managing Landlord. Without further delay, let's dive into today's episode with Grace Gudenkauf and Amelia McGee.
Celebrating 10 years, you are listening to Millennial Investing by the Investors Podcast Network. Since 2014, we interviewed successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, and investors to help educate and inspire the millennial generation. Now for your host, Patrick Donnelly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Millennial Investing Podcast. I'm your host today, Patrick Donnelly, and joining me in today's studio is Grace Gudenkauf and Amelia McGee. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
I am happy to have you here. I've been researching you both. You've got a book coming out that's very exciting. You've got women's retreats that you hold for real estate. I'm excited just to learn all that you're up to. You've got a lot going on. But I wanted to start off first, just like with your backgrounds and understanding just how you got involved in real estate to begin with. So Amelia, could you kind of kick us off and just talk about how your interest in real estate got going and how you initially got started?
Yeah, so I originally got started in real estate through financial independence, the FIRE community. So I've always been someone that wanted to work for myself, wanted to make passive income, and it started by paying off all of my student loan debt. And then it moved into during that time, why don't I start flipping properties or buying real estate to make extra money on top of my full-time job, which at the time was project management for a magazine company. And so I stumbled across Bigger Pockets during that time and started just devouring as much information as I could about real estate investing and flipped my first property in small town Iowa in 2019-2020 and then used my portion of the proceeds. I did that flip with my parents, which it took me 2 years to convince them to do a flip with me. I took my portion of the proceeds and purchased a triplex in my hometown for $78,000, which is wild, which is unheard of outside of the Midwest, but here in Iowa, you can buy properties for pretty cheap. And once that rent money started coming in, I was hooked. I was like, this is my way out of working a full-time W-2 job. And I just continued purchasing from there. But that is kind of just the start of how I got into it.
What gave you the confidence to do a flip right off the bat? And how did you convince your parents? That's a big ask. It's a difficult first step. So I wanted to hear how did that happen? Like, how did you have the confidence to do a flip?
I'm not really sure. I think I'm just reckless enough to have that confidence to do things that I'm scared of. But also, it's like planned recklessness almost. But I've always been someone that watched HGTV. I grew up in a very handy family. My mom likes to say we've never lived in a move-in ready home. They've always done projects. My parents are both very hands-on. My dad can basically build anything. And so I think a little bit of having them as partners on the deal gave me the confidence. But my dad is a Midwestern dad. He's very scared of risk. So again, it took me 2 years to convince them to buy this property, which for reference, we bought a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom home for $30,000. So it's like, even if we absolutely tanked on the flip, how much were we really going to be out? I think that was part of it too. So the risk was very low And I also just, I was so into not working for someone else for the rest of my life that I was willing to take that risk.
But you didn't come from a real estate family. Like your parents were not real estate people or investors, correct?
No, they owned one rental property 30 years ago. They bought our neighbor's house actually because they wanted control of who lived in the property when I was very young, but then they sold it. And my mom's like, I regret selling that so much. I wish we would have kept it. But other than that, nope, no realtors, no investors. They work full-time W-2 jobs. And I was kind of the first to break the mold, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. I really admire anybody getting started so young. It's really impressive. Grace, how about you? You started as an engineer, right? Like you were working as an engineer during COVID. Talk to me a little bit more about how you kickstarted your real estate career.
Absolutely. I was in college as a senior when my boyfriend was flipping a house. And I would paint every once in a while. And I was like, this is a good idea, but maybe I'll do it in like 10 years. Then I graduated. I had a good high-paying engineering job, and I wanted to figure out how to maximize my income. I was also very interested in personal finances, paid off all my debt, wanted a super solid foundation. And I distinctly remember my boyfriend, Brant, playing a Bigger Pockets episode in his truck. And I listened and I was like, I could do that. That's not that hard. So that winter of 2020, I bought a house to house hack, although I didn't even know it was called house hack at the time. And then we together went and found a DIY gut job to do our first burr. Took 6 months. We worked every single day, night, weekend. It was not fun, but somehow I fell in love with the process.
Let me ask, there's a lot of our listeners who won't know what burr is. Can you talk a little bit about what a burr project is?
Yes, it's buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. Basically, you just buy a really crappy property, add value to it, and refinance it to get your capital back out and do it on the next place.
How did you, I mean, you're in college, you've got a good job, I imagine, as with an engineering background. Were you using your capital to make these purchases, or how did you get started in terms of financing and capital? Because a lot of people have that question.
Yeah, we got 20% down on an $80,000 house. So we only had to come up with $16,000, which we self-financed. And then we also financed the renovation, which was around we paid for the renovation, which was around $30,000. But to be very clear, at that time, that was like every last bit of money we had. I remember having a conversation where it was like, we're at the end of the project. We've got no more money to sink into this. It better finish up quickly.
So how did it turn out? It was a flip, right?
It was a burr and it went well, although it took twice as long and twice as much as we thought. We still have that property today. It's been a cash flowing property. We've got decent equity in it. And it was a perfect first project, although I don't recommend a DIY gut job for somebody's first project. But thankfully, Brant had a lot of hands-on experience at the time.
You guys both just kind of went deep down the rabbit hole and got started on pretty hard projects right off the bat.
I think that that's what makes an investor successful, is having just a little bit of risk and gumption to actually get started. Because we talk to so many people who say they want to be real estate investors, but they never take the next step to get started. And I will tell you, you will learn so much more on your first project than you will by reading all the books and listening to all the podcasts. You just have to get started.
I interviewed a guy in Houston who he recommended just buying what he called old raggedy houses. Like just buy an old raggedy house. Doesn't cost too much. You know, it depends what market you're in, but in Iowa where you guys are, Columbus, Ohio, where I am, You can buy raggedy houses and really just use it as education and learn on your first flip or burr project or whatever it is. I think that's a really good way to look at it. I think some of the Bigger Pockets guys like recommend that too. Just like view it as education. And if you make money, great. If you don't, it's the cost of a course or a seminar or something like that.
Yeah, I just want to add, the only deal I've ever lost money on was a flip that I lost $1,000 on. It was the first flip I tried to do myself without a GC. And I remember thinking to myself, that is the best $1,000 course I'll ever buy on house flipping. So let me figure out how to turn this $1,000 loss into many more successful flips. And I would say I have.
What was the reason for the loss? What would you attribute that to?
I was trying to manage it while also moving across the country to Arizona, and I let it manage itself. I wasn't on top of the contractors. I wasn't on top of the budget. And then when I went to sell it, I wasn't on top of the finances to know when the price cut. I was actually now in the red, and I should have just refied it and had a cash flowing rental, but I just wanted it off my books. And then 3 months after I close, I get my books caught up and I'm like, I lost $994 on that. That sucks.
Especially on a flip, like you put a lot of time, energy, obviously money into it. It kind of does suck to lose lose money in the end, but it's not a ton of money, like you said. And it sounds like you got a ton of lessons that you've applied like to future flips. Amelia, actually, I wanted to get into a little bit more about like just how you learned about education. Like what were the books or podcasts or things like that? How did you said you were into the FIRE movement, but talk to me a little bit more about like just how you educated yourself, because I assume college, high school, you didn't have a lot of, you know, how to invest in real estate education.
No, I had no education on how to invest in real estate, but I was always one of those kids that was looking to make money. Somehow I would count the pennies in my piggy bank. I'd go under the couch cushions. I would set up the lemonade stand. So I've always been an entrepreneur. But I have the very common story of reading the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that kind of changed my perspective on how I looked at money, making my money work for me, working smarter, not harder, leveraging real estate to create wealth. And so that was my first book. I was also a Dave Ramsey follower for quite a while. Like I said, I was into the financial freedom, paying off debt. And I still would say that I'm, you know, fairly conservative when it comes to debt, although I have a lot now in real estate. I would never say get into consumer debt, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Dave Ramsey, and then just all of the Bigger Pockets products. So I started, like Grace, listening to the Bigger Pockets OG Real Estate podcast. I listened to the Rookie podcast quite a bit. And then I would just pick up real estate books here or there. Any of them from Bigger Pockets are great. I can't name specific ones off the top of my head because they're all awesome, but I'm also someone that just uses Google for everything. So anytime I would have a question about real estate, I would shoot it into Google. A lot of times the Bigger Pockets forums would pop up, and this is not an episode sponsored by Bigger Pockets, but they have so much good free information out there that is so underutilized that you can learn so much from. I would not recommend paying $20,000 for a course because you can learn it all for free online.
Yeah, there is so much out there. You mentioned the Rookie podcast. I had Ashley Kerr, I think, K-E-H-R is her last name. And she's got a great book called it's called The Real Estate Rookie, like 90 Days to Your First Investment. Really great book. Like for anybody listening that kind of needs a playbook, that book I highly recommend. It just kind of like gives you the steps of how to make your first real estate investment. Grace, how about you? Like what were the big impacts that in terms of education, the biggest way that you learned outside of traditional education, which unfortunately we just don't get great financial education in college and high school?
Number one, Instagram. It sounds crazy, but I followed so many people who would talk about their day to day and tips and tricks and things that they did and learned. And I was just a sponge, and I would absorb every single thing that I heard people talking about. And I liked to follow smaller investors who were still in the day-to-day, not preaching about making millions and all of their courses, but like, hey, I bought this house and then this happened and this is what I did. And I seriously think I learned over half of what I know in real estate from people who are sharing their knowledge on Instagram. And I like to think I do the same thing and Amelia does the same thing, but don't discount. Just make sure you follow people who are actually walking the walk and not just talking the talk.
Amelia, I want to get into how you both started scaling and building your portfolio. So can you go into that a little bit, Amelia, like what your strategy was, what your buy box was, just how you started to grow your portfolio?
Again, I started out with the triplex, which was $78,000 purchase price. I also did a BRRRR on that property, which allowed me to pull my money out that I had used for my down payment and recycle it to purchase a new property. And if you're newer to investing, there's lots of resources out there about what a BRRRR is. It took me a long time to understand the process. So if it seems kind of like, what the heck is this when you're just starting out, just know that's normal. It'll come. I did a BRRRR, pulled almost all of my money out, and purchased a quadplex from the same seller who sold me the triplex. Actually, at the closing table, when we walked out of the realtor's office, I asked if he had any other properties that he wanted to sell. And he said, I have this quadplex. I'm older. I'm kind of looking to get out of the business. Would you be interested in this? And so I told him yes, but I didn't have the money quite right then. But once I was able to refinance and pull the money out of the triplex, I closed on that quadplex with him. So very quickly, I had 7 doors in real estate terms. And I was so addicted at that point. I loved the cash flow every month that was coming in. And my parents started to see me making money. And they were like, hold on, wait a minute. We want back in. Remember when we
did that? Yeah, now they're interested.
Then they're like, hold on. Oh, you're successful at this? Let's get back in. We're getting ready to retire. They were going to retire a few years early. And the way they looked at it was, we need some extra money to cover our insurance premiums between the time when we retire and the time when Medicare or Medicaid, whichever, kicks in. So I was like, great, because I'm out of my own money. I need to find money somewhere else. So we partnered together and I purchased, I think, 8 doors with them, and then found a private money partner on Instagram, and the story goes on. But it really started kind of buying 2 of my own properties. My parents came back in and then just continued to document my process on Instagram, and then was able to find private lenders there and keep purchasing after that.
I've got a couple questions. Did you always do a value add when you, like with the quad, did you do a value add as soon as you bought it, or was it rent ready and ready to go?
So the triplex was not rent ready. I did a lot of cosmetic rehab during the couple weeks that I owned it prior to putting tenants in. So I actually took a week off my full-time job at the time to work on that property because I wasn't doing anything else. It was during the middle of COVID. So I used some PTO, did floors, did paint, did fixtures. Again, I'm pretty handy. I can DIY most of that stuff. The quadplex was value add in terms of raising rents. So all the units were move-in ready. They were already occupied, but the value came within raising rents. They were severely under market value. The landlord had not raised rents in many, many years. So I was able to add value that way. But, and then moving forward, yeah, I would say a lot of my portfolio is value add, to where we buy it severely under market value. We do a bunch of renovations, and then we turn around and refinance with the bank, pull our money back out to recycle into the next deal.
What's the seasoning process? Like, at what stage can you pull the money out, do the refinance, and get your equity back? How long does that take, like from the time you purchase it or, you know, get rental income in by to the point where you can actually refinance and pull your equity out for the next project?
So the PC answer is 6 months. However, it varies depending on the bank that you're working with. Grace and I are both huge proponents of using small local banks that can be a lot more lenient on their terms. They're not reselling these loans on the secondary market, so they don't have to abide by a lot of the rules that the secondary market has. We usually purchase in cash. Again, you can buy very cheap in Iowa, so we'll purchase in cash. There's no bank involved. We purchase a triplex for $48,000 that needed a lot of work. I think we put like $30,000 or $40,000 into it. And then we took it to a bank after 4 or 5 months and said, this project is done. We're looking to get a mortgage with you. And they did sent an appraiser out, did an appraisal, and then they put a mortgage on the property. So 6 months, but if you're working with a local bank, it can be less than that. Some banks might require a year. It really just depends on who you're working with.
Grace, how about you? How did you start scaling? You're at this full-time job, being an engineer. How did you have the time to research deals and buy deals and start building your portfolio?
I remember after our first project, hearing online something about how if you find a good deal, the money will come. And I remember promising myself, I'm not going to let the money stop me. I'm going to keep finding it and I'm going to keep doing this. So I actually turned to creative financing for quite a few of my deals. And then also BRRRRs, which I was able to raise capital for through social media, people who wanted to work with me and saw what I was doing and believed in my portfolio and my abilities.
And so were you mainly focused on single family homes, duplexes, those kind of rentals?
At first, all single family homes. And then I did a few projects in, I bought two duplexes together. Then a few projects later, I bought two fourplexes together, did a BRRRR on that eight unit. And then the creative financing was on a lot of single family homes as well. I was really all within a 15 minute radius buying, but I was using different strategies on if it was a good deal. I wasn't going to be defined by one strategy. And I think one thing people get wrong about a small market is it's not that hard to be well known and to become the person that's the go-to to close a deal. So in our smaller markets, we get a lot of word of mouth referrals. We get a lot of agents who send us deals and wholesalers who send us deals directly because there's not that many people playing in this market.
Do you provide a referral fee to anybody that brings you a deal that you end up closing on? Is that something that you do?
I always tell everybody you should advertise a $1,000 referral fee, probably more if you're in a bigger area, that you pay out if somebody brings you an off-market deal that you close on. So they need to give me the seller's information. And it needs to be a dollar amount that's big enough to make an ex-boyfriend call. That's what I always say. And you bet I've had a high school ex-boyfriend send me deals because he's thinking of that $1,000 check, even though I haven't talked to him in 5 years. So it's free unless you actually close on the deal. So there's absolutely no reason to not advertise that. Get your contractors, your families, your friends, your bankers, your agents to be walking, talking billboards for your business.
Yeah. And once you get that snowball rolling, you are kind of the go-to person in your community. It's really a great strategy. Amelia, do you focus too geographically on how you're investing?
Yeah, definitely. So I invest in the Des Moines Metro, which is the capital of Iowa. And then I also invest in Southern Iowa in my hometown. So my portfolio is 41 doors. That's pretty split 50-50 between those two markets. I would say moving forward, I'm trying to diversify a little bit more in the Des Moines market versus a smaller market just because it's not as stable in a smaller market. There's not the appreciation. If one major employer in the area moves out of the area, there goes half of your tenant base. But I would say I'm mostly focused in Iowa. There's a lot of people that invest out of state, but I'm of the opinion that if you don't need to go somewhere else, why would you? Basically, I'm in Des Moines, Iowa, and I'm mainly focused on small to mid-sized multifamily. So anything from 3 units up to 20-unit apartment buildings is really my buy box.
Grace, I wanted to hear about how both of you got connected. Like, how did you meet up and form this partnership that you guys are doing a podcast now? You've got the book that we're going to talk about here shortly. Talk to me about how you first teamed up together.
Like I said, I loved following really cool people on Instagram who were doing a lot of real estate. And I found Amelia. I was like, whoa, you're another young, cool girl doing real estate in Iowa. I swear there's only two of us. We should be best friends. So I slid into her DMs and I introduced myself. And immediately we started to become very close friends because when you're doing something like real estate, you want to have an outlet of somebody that you can talk to and bounce ideas off of. And many, many people don't have that in their real life. So I had also put on my 2021 goals to start a meetup. So I was like, Amelia, you want to be the speaker to this not yet created meetup? It's going to be for women in real estate. And I just put out a link on Instagram and I told myself, if 5 people come to this, I'll be happy. And like 30 people showed up to it. And I remember saying to Amelia, that was crazy. We've got something is here. We should do this and make it actually a thing. So from that month on, that was in January of 2021, we did that meetup every single month. It was free. That slowly turned into what Wire is today. And it has been such a ride. And never when we started that meetup would I ever think we'd be doing retreats and a book and everything that we have going on today.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey, everyone. It's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guys trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/millennialinvesting. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with all that's going on in the markets and feel like you just can't keep up with the day-to-day news headlines? Today's show sponsor, Yahoo Finance, is my go-to solution to keeping up with today's top news and stay informed with what is happening globally. With Yahoo Finance, I'm able to see the biggest trends and biggest movers in the stock market, what is happening with interest rates, major geopolitical events, and much more. If it wasn't for Yahoo Finance, I would have no idea that Tesla is laying off 10% of their staff, or why iPhone shipments are down 9% year over year. Yahoo Finance also has a number of other cool features, including a tool that lets you link in all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts. Yahoo Finance is one of my favorite tools I use in my investing toolkit, and it's what I use each morning to kick off my day and stay in the loop with what's happening in the markets. Join more than 90 million monthly users today and get comprehensive financial news and analysis at yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
Amelia, let's get into that. I really am super fascinated at how you've built this community. WIRE stands for, tell me again, just for our listeners.
Yeah, it's Women Invest in Real Estate.
Okay, and then tell me about the retreats. Like, how did that come about, and where are you doing it? How are you structuring it? I think my wife is actually a mental health therapist, and she talks about doing retreats a lot. And I'm very interested to learn more about how you guys have done the retreats.
We started the free meetups in February of 2021, and then we hosted our first retreat in February of 2022. And it was really created out of selfish necessity, I would say. Grace and I were both looking for a retreat for female real estate investors. And so one day I just texted Grace. I said, hey, we're going to be hosting this retreat. She said, oh no, I'm not really so sure about that. And I said, oh, well, I already sent out the email invite, so we're doing it. We had no idea what we were doing, but again, I think we just have a little bit of reckless confidence and that we can get things done when we set our mind to it. So we sold out of that retreat within a couple of days because it was so needed. Women in real estate really want to connect with other women in real estate, especially younger millennial investors who haven't quite made it to multi-million dollar status yet, because we're all going through the same problems. We're facing tenant issues, funding issues, contractor issues, whatever the case may be, and just having someone to talk to about it is so powerful. And so these are 20-person retreats. We've hosted 6 sold-out retreats now all across the United States. They're generally about 20 women, and we all stay in one super gorgeous mansion Airbnb for 3 or 4 days and network, learn, connect. It's a super fun time. Grace and I are great hosts, if I do say so myself. So that's kind of what a WIRE retreat is.
That's such a great idea. So it's at an Airbnb. Are you bringing in speakers from outside, or is it mostly the two of you that are leading the retreat, or how do you guys do that?
We keep the conversations and the masterminds at the retreat as collaborative as possible. We're not there to preach at people, although we do lead some of the masterminds. But you'll find that if you get any group of 20 women in real estate together, there is so much knowledge already there in the room, just waiting to be shared, that the best things about our retreats is just what you learn just talking to people and having conversations.
That's so cool. So how often are you doing them and when is the next one?
Great question. So we did four in 2022 to 2023 and we were like, man, we might need to slow down. So we're doing two a year. The next one is September 5th through 8th in Salt Lake City. I'm not sure when this episode is coming out, but the waitlist for that is open. We open registration for the waitlist before anyone else gets access to it. And our last retreat sold out in 12 hours to the waitlist only. So you have to be on it if you want to get in. Super fun. These are for investors that have done at least three deals because we really want you. It's not where you come and learn how to invest in real estate. It's where you come and you network with people that are already doing it just like you are. They're so much fun. Highlight of our year. If you want to get on it, go to Wire. You can find the waitlist, but we would love to meet you there.
So Grace, you've also got this podcast that you're doing, and I think initially you approached Bigger Pockets. They turned you down. So I wanted to hear a little bit about the backstory of that.
When we first started, Amelia and I were like, there's nobody fun, young and female, talking about real estate. We need to do that. And so we kicked it around for a year or two. And we were doing YouTube for Bigger Pockets. So we told them, hey, why don't you have us be another show? You don't have any demographic like this. We're really fun. We're funny. We keep it real. And they were like, you know, great idea. We're not ready for it. Why don't you guys do some more YouTube? Which, thank God they said that, because about a year later, we ended up launching our own podcast where we're in control of what we get to do and say and record. But I think the lesson learned is shoot your shot, ask what you want to ask. You never know who's going to say yes. And we didn't let them saying no end up deter us. And now fast forward another 2 years and we've written a book for them. So it all worked out how it was supposed to be. But it is funny that we shot our shot and they were like, no.
Tell me, I mean, you guys have so much going on. How, Amelia, talk to me just about how your time is being spent. You've got these retreats you're doing. You've got the podcast that you're doing. I think you said it comes out twice a week. You've got your own portfolio that you've got going on. So talk to me about just how you're spending your time.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to calendar management too, just batching what we're working on. So Grace and I will film our episodes on 2 days of the week. Property management for me and asset management has become less of my day-to-day just because I've hired that out now to an internal property manager, which is great. But we work on Wire 4 days a week, just content planning for any courses that we have, retreats, the podcast, and then we both take 1 day a week on Tuesdays where we don't do any work for Wire and we specifically just do asset management for our own portfolios. So everything to do with our rental properties gets done on those days. And that's kind of how we balance it out. But it's kind of crazy. It's kind of wild some days just running around doing what we can. But we try to kind of calendar block and manage it that way.
Grace, do you have more in the works in terms of content creation, like a newsletter or anything else that are in the works for Wire?
We have a team. I think that's also a huge piece is that we have a team for real estate. We have a team for Wire. We just hired our first full-time person. We do have a newsletter that comes out every week, I believe. And we have people behind the scenes working on the sponsorships and the Instagram and editing our podcasts and all of that. And there's no way we could be doing everything that we're doing if it was just Amelia and I.
How are you monetizing the podcast? Is it sponsors that you're seeking out that have signed up with you?
Yeah, we're really lucky that, first of all, we have a very niche audience, just like you do. And we've been able to work with some really great sponsors that are real estate specific who have sponsored our episodes or meetups or anything like that. And are a great match and fit for our audience. We're very, very protective of the people in our community and making sure that we're only recommending things that are incredible and useful. But we've worked with some awesome sponsors.
I wanted to take a step back and talk about how and when you eventually both left your W-2s. At what point did you have the income, the passive income, to leave and say, I'm done with regular employment, I'm going to focus on real estate and Wire? Amelia, can you talk about that?
So, bought my first property in October of 2020. I ended up quitting my full-time job in June of 2021. And I remember specifically having conversations with Grace about it, like, I want to quit my job, but I think I'm going to wait another year to 6 months because that salary is so much extra money that I can use to buy more properties with, all of the things. And during that time, I actually switched jobs. I switched companies. I got a really great offer from another company, which had like a 20% raise. So I made the switch there. About 2 weeks into that job, when they actually started to expect things from me and I was out of the training process, I was like, I just can't do it. My passion isn't here. My brain is somewhere else. So I actually left. This is a crazy story. I left my laptop, left my badge, left everything at my desk, went home one day, wrote an email to my supervisor and my manager and just said, I'm done. I'm not coming in tomorrow. I am going to pursue real estate investing full time. And I texted Grace and said, I quit my job. I did it. Again, I can be reckless, but if I had been in that position for a long time, I would have given them 2 weeks, but I was still kind of training. They weren't expecting things from me. I didn't have clients I was working with yet. And hitting send on that email was probably one of the scariest moments of my life, because once you send an email that says, I'm quitting today, like there's no taking that back, really. I said, I left my laptop at my desk. I'm not coming in tomorrow. I'm so sorry. I didn't want to waste any more of your time. I'm done. So that's how it went.
It's scary, but did it feel really good too? Like you're on to this next chapter that you'd been building towards anyway, right? Like this was going to happen eventually.
Yeah, it felt so good. I would say that my cash flow from my rental properties, also just to give you a little insight financially, wasn't quite what I was making at my full-time job. It didn't quite match up. But I knew that with 40 extra hours in my week to focus full time on real estate investing, I could make up for that money very quickly. And even if I couldn't, I could go be a bartender. I could wait tables. I could donate plasma. There were so many other ways that I was willing to scrap around and make money that I knew that I could make it work.
Grace, what about you? You're working as an engineer. I imagine you're pretty strategic. Like, how did you formulate your plan to leave W-2 employment?
Well, first of all, I want to say I was absolutely not making the passive income that to match my W-2. It was a leap of faith. I had a little bit of a different story around the same time as Amelia switching jobs. My first job was remote out of California, so I was in purgatory for 6 months to a year, not knowing should I move. And that's when I started to invest in real estate. And I finally decided I'm not going out to California because I will not be able to do any real estate out there. So I let my team know that I was quitting. I only lasted 10 or 11 months, maybe. And I knew it was a leap of faith. I had an emergency fund. I also wrote out my worst case scenario. Do I need to bartend? Do I need to do this? Do I need to move home if this happens? And I knew I was going to have to wholesale or do something extra to make up for that cash flow.
I think that worst case scenario, kind of, what is the worst that can happen here? You know, and to your point, Amelia, you can always go bartend or be an Uber driver or do whatever to make enough income to, you know, have enough to make it till you're, you know, you've actually built your portfolio. Once you left your jobs, talk to me a little bit about the financing. Did you find that harder or was it not really an issue because you were doing more creative financing?
For me, it wasn't an issue because I'd already been building relationships with small local banks. And I was also partnering with my parents and a couple other people. So they were able to show their W-2 income to secure loans for us. But actually, the bank never even questioned it after I quit my job. And one other thing that I did want to add for anyone out there listening, like Grace said, we both had big emergency funds. Neither one of us had any consumer or student loan debt left. So we were also in a great position there. And neither one of us have children or anyone else relying on us, or even neither one of us even have pets. So it was easier for us to make that leap, I would say, than someone in a different situation than us.
And when you're young, it's such a good time to take risks like you both have done.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people ask how I was able to quit so early. And it was because I was so young. I was less than a year out of college. I was still living like a college person. It is so much easier for me to take a chance than if I have a full mortgage and 2 car payments and 2 kids. That's a completely different story. But I did want to add a couple things about the financing. I also didn't have any issues the first 2 years because I already had a relationship with a commercial bank and did commercial loans where it's more about the asset, not you as a person. And also, I did learn creative financing with a purpose. I did creative financing because I knew I was going to be quitting my job. And that's why I went all in on that. And actually, the only time I've ever had issues with financing was about 4 months ago. We bought a primary residence here in Arizona. And 2.5 years into having a job with having a full-time business with absolutely no issues financing any of my rental properties, I actually had trouble with the bank here in Arizona of getting on the loan. And so they ended up just putting my partner on the loan because it was quote unquote too hard to figure out my self-employment, which I thought was hilarious.
Let's get into a little bit about the book. Amelia, talk to me about the book, how that came about, the title of the book. It's going to be released here real soon. So talk to me more about how you guys got started on the book.
The book is called The Self-Managing Landlord, More Profit, Time, and Peace of Mind with DIY Management. And it first started, just to give you a backstory, I think two years ago, Grace, we also pitched a book to Bigger Pockets. We are going to shoot our shot no matter what.
Hey, to be fair, they said no to the podcast, but let's talk about a book. We talked about the book. Both parties agreed there's really no meat on the bone here. Maybe another time.
We couldn't quite land on a topic, so we didn't move forward with that. Well, turns out a year later, they sent us an email. They said, remember when we had that conversation about writing a book? Well, we have a really awesome idea that we think you guys would be perfect authors for. Let's set up a meeting. And we were so giddy. We were like, oh my gosh, what's the topic going to be? We're so excited. It's going to be fun. And they said, it's going to be about how to self-manage rental properties. And we were like, oh my gosh, that's the most boring topic on planet Earth. Like, oh, but we were going to do it no matter what, honestly. That is the whole process, how the process started of writing the book. And Grace can kind of give more insights, but that's the background.
I do want to hear about the writing process. Like, how did you guys divide it up? How did you structure it? Did they provide some coaching for you? I mean, it's your first book ever. Talk to me about that process.
So the second that we realized, let's talk about self-management and systems and processes behind being the CEO of your business, we really started to get behind the idea. And we started with a very thorough 10 plus page outline that they then approved. It was split up into two pieces, the how-tos of self-managing, renting, leasing, evictions, maintenance requests, and then the how-tos of running a business, banking and systems and processes and procedures and checklists and quick guides. Then we started to get really excited. We did the whole first manuscript in 6 weeks. They reached out in like July or August of 2023. It's now out, published April of 2024. So we did the first manuscript in 6 weeks. They gave some edits, actually ended up rearranging the chapters because Amelia and I had split it into, she was writing about the how-tos of management and I was writing about the how-tos of the business. And then now the final layout is more into 4 parts, setting up your business, the actual parts of management, which you can skip if you feel like you already know that piece, difficult situations, and then ending with how to continue to build upon your portfolio without buying more, how to continue to operate as the CEO and delegate maybe to an internal manager. So I think it's a pretty darn good book and it really applies to a wide audience.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guys trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member of FINRA-SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into a partner bank where they can earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days. I've noticed this at my own businesses that I've run. You'd be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/MI. netsuite.com/MI. That's netsuite.com/MI.
All right, back to the show.
Let's get into the difficult situations. What are some of those difficult situations that you wrote about, that you've experienced yourself? Talk to me a little bit about that, Amelia.
Good question. That's a whole can of worms. That's just part of being a landlord. There's going to be difficult situations. It's a customer service-based business, in our opinion, because the tenant is very much our customer. They are paying for a product, which is their home. But difficult situations, anything to do with tenants, non-payment of rent, maintenance requests, tenant issues between with other tenants, inherited tenants, because inherited tenants, you didn't get to screen them, you didn't get to onboard them, they aren't used to your rules. We can tell specific stories if you want to get into
that. Yeah, do you
that,
have like a horror story that just comes to mind real quickly of like
I can start with one.
Yeah, if go ahead, Grace.
A story I told in the book is how I got desperate for a renter in February in Iowa. If you know anything about Iowa, nobody wants to move in the middle of winter. So instead of having a very strict procedure that I could follow and know exactly what I was going to do and what were my requirements were, I got emotional and desperate. I found a tenant willing to pay what I wanted and move in immediately, which that's a red flag. And so I dropped all of my rental requirements and didn't do a background and credit check, which now is very standard and streamlined in my business. What do you know? 6 months later, she's been evicted for non-payment of rent. She never had any intention of paying rent. And that was a great lesson to learn of if you don't have systems and processes and you just run around making emotional decisions, barely keeping your head above water, you are not in a headspace to make the best decision for your business and you're gonna get burned.
Amelia, I want to hear a little bit about like your, both of you, like your tech stack, like how you are managing the rentals in terms of just the technology you use to kind of streamline things and make things more efficient.
The most important part of your tech stack is your property management software. We would recommend from day one, you start with one. We both use Tenant Cloud, but there's probably literally hundreds out there. We would say that what they need to be able to do is sign e-leases, collect rent, auto-assign late fees and have a really robust maintenance request system. Those are huge in tenant messaging system. Because the goal is to be able to keep everything as systemized and in one place as possible right from the get-go. So your property management software is huge. The second thing that we both use, because we do a lot of midterm rentals, which are 30-day stays that are furnished for traveling nurses usually, is some sort of calendar management software and messaging software. So we use what's called Hospitable for that, and that's huge. It automatically talks to our cleaner. It sends messages to our tenants. It keeps a calendar because we're onboarding these tenants from Airbnb, Furnished Finder, Facebook Marketplace groups, word of mouth. So there's not one centralized system to keep track of your calendar. So we are huge on that. What are some things I'm missing, Grace? Those are my top two.
We do love our project management system. We use Monday in both Wire and our own real estate. You don't have to do that if you're just starting out. You just need to have some sort of system. So if it's checklists and Google Sheets, absolutely use that. But we're at the point where we've got very dynamic businesses with lots of acquisitions and turnovers and dispositions happening. So when we can auto-populate a checklist that we've created to specifically for our business that has assigned to people in our business with due dates, that's how the day-to-day gets done. Nothing gets missed, nothing is late, and everything is done the same way every time.
Grace, how did you turn over property management? You're doing it yourself initially. Like, at what point did you explore turning it over to a property manager at all? Or how did you make that transition from managing it yourself to farming it out?
A year and a half in, I bought that 8-unit I talked about, and it was managed previously by one of the quote unquote premier property managers in the area. And automatically upon acquisition, there was so much value add in the mismanagement. It was under market rent. Pet fees weren't being assessed. There were broken down cars in the parking lot. So I was like, if this is what management is, I am never hiring this out. But I knew I couldn't do the day-to-day forever. So about 3-4 months later, about 2 years in, maybe a year and a half in, I hired 10 hours a week hourly for somebody to help me with all the paperwork. So the leasings, the turnovers, handling maintenance requests. She helped me for a year. It was incredible. It was the best $800 a month I ever spent. And I was like, I have a taste of this freedom. I need more. So after a year of her, she went her own way. She had a great job offer. I flipped her into a full-time position of project and property management. So I now have a full-time W-2 employee who does probably 3/4 project management and 1/4 property management. So I have way better quality service. I pay probably 1/3 to 1/4 of what I would pay a PM company. And I have the quality control because I get to set the procedures.
Amelia, did you kind of transition in a similar way, or was it different for you?
Yeah. So Grace pushed me for a long time to hire someone because I did not do that nearly as soon as she did. So kudos to her. My portfolio was at 36 doors, which were a combination of midterm, long-term. I had a short-term Airbnb rental in there. And I knew it was time to hire out when me being the property manager was literally losing me money. The money that I was going to be spending on a property manager would actually save my business money in the long term because I wasn't doing that job as well as I could because I was trying to do so many things. So I'll give you an example. One thing that was costing me money was on my turnovers. I was so busy, I couldn't prioritize my turnover procedures. So a tenant would tell me they were moving out in 30 days and I'd say, okay, I can handle that in 30 days. I would totally put it out of sight, out of mind. And then when the 30 days rolled around, I had nobody to take over the lease and it would sit vacant for a whole nother month. A month of vacancy, it really kills your cash flow for the year because there's nobody paying that $1,000 in rent or whatever the case may be that month. Right off the bat there, I was losing $1,000 a month. So when I hired a property manager, now our procedures are, as soon as we get a notice, we list the property for rent. We do a pre-move-out walkthrough about 2 weeks before they move out so we can make note of any repairs that we need to have our handyman or our painter come in and do. So then the day they move out, the minute after they're out the door, our handyman comes in, he makes those repairs. We've already pre-listed the property. We've already been doing showings. so we can get a lease signed immediately and get someone moved in.
You both have talked a little bit about being the CEO of your company. There's a book called The E-Myth, which talks about working on your business versus working in your business. And you really, you know, you want to get to the point where you've farmed everything out. Say more about that, because you go into it in the book, it sounds like. So how do you think about becoming the CEO of your own portfolio?
I think Amelia's example just said it best. If you're stuck in the day-to-day, you cannot be proactive enough to keep up your income and keep your expenses down, because she couldn't look up from her business and think about how to cut down on vacancies. So working on your business would be finding new deals, making new contractor managed relationships, increasing your rent or changing your rental strategy to make more money. Working in your business is sending over paperwork for tenants, handling maintenance requests, dropping things off in person. It's all that day-to-day stuff that keeps you from looking up and being able to see the bigger picture. And the other thing I want to point out is you don't need to be good at everything. You should focus on what you're really good at. I'm good at finding deals. So when I'm able to hire out the property management, now I don't have to dread property management. And I get to spend 4 times more time on finding good deals to fuel my business and make myself more money.
Yeah, it's like the 80-20, you know, the Pareto principle. It's like, what are the 20% of the activities that are driving 80% of your profits, and focus on that, right?
That's 100% it.
I wanted to go into a little bit of Amelia, like how do you see your strategy changing over time? Like, do you think you'll just continue with your current strategy, or do you guys have future goals that you want to take it to a different level?
Oh boy, that's a great question. Well, so
I have one that we want to do. We want to syndicate a wire house, a wire retreat house in 2025.
Say more about that. Like, how would that look?
Yeah. So for anyone out there listening that doesn't know what syndication is, it's basically where you raise funds from private investors to invest in a property, a large multi, doesn't, you know, whatever it is. You raise outside funds. So we spend a lot of money on renting out the retreat houses. And we're like, what are we doing? Let's just buy our own or build our own house. Let's fund it using all women in the wire community's money. They'll make dividends on that money. And then we save paying all those fees to other investors. Plus, we do real estate full time. We know how to run Airbnbs. We know how to run short-term rentals. We'll just rent it out when we're not using it for our own retreats. That is a huge thing on our list. And Grace, I was going to say, I've always been of the opinion I want to be a small and mighty investor. I don't want a portfolio that's hundreds of thousands of units, because at some point you lose sight of why you even invested in the first place, which for me is for very passive income to be able to live a life outside of having to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week. I have a lot of hobbies. I need to be self-employed. But I want to build a very small but mighty portfolio. But Grace and I have talked about that syndication part. Are we going to move into, we have an amazing community of women investors. Are we going to buy bigger deals and use private money with the women that are in our community? So that's something we've been talking about lately, but not sure where that's going to go.
Well, once you get the wheel or the ball rolling too, like more and more opportunities open up to you. At some point, you have to figure out what you say no to, right? It's like you have the no list.
Well, I think, Amelia, where you're able to marry those two concepts is we're not willing to work 40 hours a week on a syndication. We are willing to build a great team who can run it for us, and we can stick to what we're good at and keep our time freedom, make money, and be more passive, but also lend our expertise to the project, which is what people are investing in. We're not saying, I'm going to go work 100 hours a week to run 90 syndications.
Yeah, you have no desire to do that, correct?
No.
So it's more about lifestyle, using real estate to build the lifestyle you want, right?
Right. We don't want to manage a syndication, but we can definitely raise the funds for one, because that's our area of expertise. It's finding deals and it's raising money. So we can hire out the rest. We can do what we're good at.
Now with Wire, are you in multiple cities, or there are groups that, like, almost like a franchise, there are different cities, and is that on the on the drawing board at all for you guys?
We've talked about that many times. We don't currently have in-person chapters, but there are lots of groups who do it and are great at it. For us, we're really focused on our free Facebook community and cultivating amazing relationships there. And also we run our retreats. And then I'd say our third thing we're really focused on, which is also virtual, is our CEO bootcamp, which teaches you everything you need to learn to run your business and not be in the day-to-day. So while we'd love to get in person, it's not on the next 12 months docket, but it might be in the future.
Amelia, I just wanted to hear, like, just in thinking back of building your portfolio, is there anything you would have done differently or mistakes that you made that you wish you would have corrected at some point? Just like, you know, somebody that's listening to this, like, what would you advise them to don't do this? You know, this was a mistake I made that I could have avoided, something like that.
I would actually say my biggest mistake when I started real estate investing was not house hacking. And I know that's kind of a weird answer, but I'll share with you what house hacking is if you've never heard of it. It's basically where you buy a property and you rent it out. So either if you buy a duplex, you live in one side of it because you get a lower down payment with an owner-occupied loan. You're usually going to get a better interest rate. And if you live in one side and rent out the other, a lot of times the person living in the other unit will probably be paying enough rent to cover the entire mortgage and insurance and property taxes, if not cover all of it, cover most of it. So then you're living rent-free, and the money that you could have been spending in rent or would have been spending paying rent somewhere else, you're saving that money and using it to buy another property in the future. It's such a powerful strategy. I wish that I would have used it right out of college. Grace used it, which is amazing. But other than that, another thing for me is just not documenting what I was doing the first time around and reinventing the wheel every single time I would do something, whether that was onboarding tenants or creating a lease or maintenance requests. That's so important because you want that passive income. You want that time freedom. You need to start documenting what you're doing so you're not doing it over again every single time.
So you can create a system that you can then just replicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the house hacking idea. I interviewed the FI couple. I don't know if you are familiar with either of them. They're a couple that invest in real estate. And they said basically exactly what you did, Amelia, just that house hacking is the way to get started in real estate. Do that, learn, cover your rent, and then you can start building from there. Grace, how about you? Is there anything looking back on things that you would have wished you would have done differently?
I agree with Amelia. I call it the sit and think. When you go to do something you've done 100 times, and because you have nothing written down, you sit and you think, what am I supposed to be doing right now? I wasted so much time and effort the first 2 years scaling doing that because I wasn't able to step into a CEO mindset and systemize things. So if you're just getting started, like Amelia said, start a simple Google Doc. It can be bullet points of when you're buying a house, what are you doing? You're reading over the Alta, you're scheduling the wire, you're checking your due diligence, just writing out everything so you can do the same thing every single time. It saves you so much money. And Amelia and I, for example, love to forget to buy insurance for our rental properties until like the day of closing. So that will never happen. That's a huge disaster waiting to happen. But don't do the sit and think, get systemized.
So you're doing all this to create the lifestyle you want. I wanted to touch on a little bit, Amelia and Grace, like what do you guys like to do outside of real estate?
I am a very mediocre pickleball player. I love hiking. I love climbing. I'm probably even more mediocre at climbing, but anything outside is very fun in Arizona. And I also would say I'm a huge reader.
That's awesome. I just was out in Joshua Tree doing some bouldering and it's so beautiful. I love the desert. So I'm kind of jealous that you've made the move from the Midwest to Arizona. And pickleball is awesome as well. It's such a good game. Amelia, how about you?
Yeah, I would consider myself an advanced pickleball player. I love it.
She beat me 11-0 once.
Oh, man.
So I love pickleball. I love traveling. That's something that Grace and I are both really passionate about. We do a lot of traveling. I just love being outside. Craft beer is a hobby of mine as well.
Making it or drinking it?
And I'm also an avid reader. Drinking it. I'm really good at drinking it.
That's awesome.
I used to work at a brewery for 7 years as like a fun side hustle, part-time job. So And really anything, board games. I am an Enneagram type 7. So if you're out there listening and you know Enneagrams, so is Grace. We're always down for an adventure. We're always down to try something new. So lots of hobbies.
That's cool. Since you're both readers, Grace, is there one book that has made a huge impact on your life, or something that you, like your most gifted book? Do you have something like that?
Recently, 10X is Easier Than 2X by Dan Sullivan. That was huge. And I will say the reason it was huge was because when I read it, I sat down and I read it slowly and I did every single exercise in the book. Normally, I like to read things really quick and be like, I'll do that later. But it really is so much more impactful when you do what the book tells you to do.
Say more about that. I'm familiar with the book. I've not read it. What's the main idea? Like, what's the main takeaway?
The main idea is that if you attempt to 10X something, by default, it's always going to be easier than trying to double your effort. And the reason is because when you go to 10X something, you have to be revolutionary in how you're approaching it. Because to 10X, your profit or your output or your rental portfolio is massive. So you have to think massively outside the box, delegate massively, be super attentive to detail. And even if you fail by half, you still 5X it. And it's also basically saying, what are the 10X things that you've done in the past? For me, a 10X was quitting my job. In Wire, it was throwing the first retreat. And appreciating them and knowing that there are different waves that you go through where a 10X might happen. And they get bigger and bigger.
I'll have to check it out. It sounds, I've definitely heard about it. Many people have recommended it. So I'll definitely have to give it a read. I'm a huge reader too. But Amelia, how about you? What's one book that's made a huge impact on your life and career?
Mine's The Boring Answer of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I know it's kind of a controversial book these days, but it just opened my eyes to the world of entrepreneurship, like I said earlier, and just making your money work for you. Whether or not I apply the same principles that they preach in the book is irrelevant to me, because it was the pivotal turning point in my life to start thinking in terms of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's a great book. I mean, I don't know that there's any controversy about the book. I mean, the author itself.
The author.
right. He's not everybody's cup of tea these days, it doesn't seem like. But this has been a lot of fun, ladies. I really admire what you've both done and the portfolio you've built. You've got so much going on in terms of content creation. Say a little bit more about, Grace, how people can get in touch with you, how they can learn about the book, The Wire. Just go ahead and give a little plug for what you guys are up to.
You can find Wire on Instagram at wire.community. Wire has two eyes. Also, womeninvestinrealestate.com. And then me personally at grace.investing on Instagram.
And that's where you're most active, is Instagram?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to get a hold of us. I'll let Amelia share her handle as well.
Yeah, mine is Amelia Joe REI on Instagram. And then if you're interested in purchasing the book, it's available on biggerpockets.com, and it's titled The Self-Managing Landlord. Like I said earlier, it's a beautiful blue cover. So if you're looking for it, that's what it looks like. But we would love to meet you on Instagram if you want to join us over there.
Very exciting about the book. Congratulations. You've got such a great life going on, the things that you're up to. So I really, really appreciate your time. I'll put links in the show notes to everything that you're up to. Bigger Pockets does such a fantastic job in terms of like publishing their books. They're so well done. So I'm sure it's going to be a great book. Really well, I hope you sell a ton of it, and just wish you both the best of luck in everything that you're up to.
Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Okay, folks, that's all I had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll see you back here real soon.
Thank you for listening to TIP. Make sure to follow Millennial Investing on your favorite podcast app and never miss out on our episodes. To access our show notes, transcripts, or courses, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decision, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.